The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I'm Ann Rostosky, Vice President of the Board, and on behalf of the congregation, I want to extend you a welcome. From far or near, and we have people from far today, from wherever you've come, wherever you may be on your life's journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, whoever loves you, we welcome you this morning into this ever-expanding circle of love, compassion, and justice-seeking people. If you are visiting us for the first time or are new to us, you will notice a link to a virtual connection card in the chat. Feel free to fill this out at any time during the service if you'd like us to send you more information about Unitarian Universalism and or this congregation. Welcome. And now, Deva and Karen Kaiser will do our chalice lighting.
My beloved people, I cannot pretend, and so I will not tell you, that everything is okay right now, that there is no reason to be angry, that you must be optimistic or at peace. I cannot pretend these things, and so I will not tell them to you. But now our chalice is lit! And so all I ask in this moment is that we remember the words of Rebecca Parker. There is a love. There's a love holding us. There's a love holding all. By the light of our lit chalice, let us rest in this love.
And now Preston will light the peace lamp.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
Now we will have our gathering song. We Would Be One. This is from our gray hymnal, which you may or may not have, but you'll recognize it, I think.
Be one as now we join in singing our hymn of love to pledge ourselves anew to that high cause of greater understanding of who we are and what in us is true. We would be one in living for each other, to show to all a new community. We would be one in building for tomorrow, a nobler world than we have known today. We would be one in searching for that meaning which binds our hearts and points us on our way. As one, we pledge ourselves to greater service, with love and justice, strive to make us free.
And now Mike Berkheimer will do our moment for all ages.
Hello. This is quite a turnout for the Millard Fillmore sermon. I'm impressed. One of the things I was asked to do the moment for all ages, and a couple things struck me because we were talking about campaign songs for Millard Fillmore, and we think of modern day political campaigns and YouTube ads and pop-ups and things like that. Well, that technology didn't exist. So one of the big ways to do it was parades back then and songs. You would have a campaign song. And this lasted for a long time, even into the 20th century. Now, I'd like to show probably the most successful instance of this in the 20th century. And there might be some of you in this audience who remember this actual campaign song, which was a hugely successful in 1952.
I for president, you like I, do. I like I, do. Everybody likes I
for president.
Hang out the banner, beat the drum, we'll take I to Washington.
We don't want John,
or Dean,
or Harry,
let's do that big job right. Just get in step with the guy that's hep, get in step with I. You like I, do. I like I, do. Everybody likes I
for president.
Hang out the banner, beat the drum, we'll take I to Washington. We got to get where we are going.
Does anyone remember that? Anyone here? Well, Phil, that was very successful. Now, in the 19th century, they didn't have recorded music when Millard Fillmore was president, but they did have sheet music, which they would send out, and they would generally use a popular song at the time. And one of the big hits of the mid-19th century was a song called Wait for the Wagon, which was about a man proposing to a woman that she should come live on his farm, and it would be better than marrying that rich guy over there. And just to get a feel for the melody here, if we could play this Wait for the Wagon.
Wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon, and we'll all take a ride. Wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon, and we'll all take a ride. Will you come with me, my Phyllis dear, to yon blue mountain free, where the blossoms smell the sweetest? Come rove along with me. It's every Sunday morning when I am by your side. We'll jump into the wagon and all take a ride. Wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon, and we'll all take a ride. Wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon, wait for the wagon, and we'll all take a ride.
Well, what had happened with that was Millard Fillmore, after he was president, ran for president in 1856 on the ticket of the American or Know Nothing Party, the anti-immigrant party, and took that song, that popular song, and repurposed it as a Millard Fillmore campaign song. Now, he wound up getting about 20% of the vote or so. So it wasn't that successful, but this was the technique. If we could play the Millard Fillmore version of Wait for the Wagon.
Wait
There's right and wrong in parties, and the right is on our side. So mount the Fillmore wagon and through the nation ride. The Union is our wagon, the people are its springs, and every true American for Millard Fillmore sings. Wait for the wagon, the Millard Fillmore wagon. Wait for the wagon and we'll all take a ride. Our wagon is a noble one, 'twas made in 1776. 'Twas driven by George Washington through stormy politics. Palmetto, cypress, cottonwood, in spokes and wheels you'll find western oak and eastern pine and northern ash combined. Wait for the wagon, the Millard Fillmore wagon. Wait for the wagon and we'll all take a ride. In this our glorious wagon, with Donelson beside, through all the troubled elements, brave Fillmore soon will ride. And where the foreigner would rule, and freedom they would take, they will not play us for the fool, for we are wide awake. Yes, wait for the wagon, the Millard Fillmore wagon. Wait for the wagon, and we'll all take a ride.
Wow, makes you want to go out and knock doors for Millard Fillmore. But, you know, at times I kind of wish politics was still like that with the pageantry and the glee clubs and all that stuff. But it's not, alas, and we get these YouTube ads and what, you know, negative TV ads and so forth. But it was a different time. And that was our educational moment for the day.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about Millard Fillmore, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I hope you recognized our theme song there. Millard Fillmore, our 13th United States president, is generally not remembered well by historians, and he was a Unitarian. But our first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. So what about Millard was good? Well, in true David Letterman fashion, I'm going to give you the top 10 good things about Millard Fillmore. Okay, number 10. Millard Fillmore overcame a hard childhood. He was born in 1800 as the second of 9 children. His father was an unsuccessful farmer. The only books their family had were a Bible, school texts, and an atlas. Millard was only able to attend school in the winters. He learned to be a hard worker. Number 9, Millard Fillmore loved books and valued education. His father arranged for his apprenticeship with a wool carder and cloth dresser, which I had to look up. They're the people that take raw wool and make it into cloth. He bought a dictionary and laid it open where he could read it as he walked by to learn new words. At 18, he took a teaching job, which stretched his academic abilities and made him realize that he needed a more formal education. Number 8, Millard Fillmore married an older woman, something I find admirable. After Millard realized he needed more education, he attended an academy where he fell in love with his teacher, who was 2 years his senior. Once he became a lawyer, they got married and had 2 children, a girl and a boy. Number 7, Millard Fillmore became a lawyer and entered politics. Well, some of you may not think of this as a good thing, but in 1827, Miller became an attorney on the New York Supreme Court in Buffalo, and he entered politics in 1828 with the Anti-Masonic Party and was elected to the New York State Assembly. In that role, he drafted and secured passage of a law abolishing imprisonment for debtors in New York. Number 6. Millard Fillmore believed in separation of church and state. In the state government role, Millard drafted a bill to repeal a law that required witnesses to swear their belief in God and the afterlife. Unfortunately, that bill never made it out of committee, like many good bills. He had liberal ideas about religion, having been raised by nominal Methodists, studied under a Quaker judge, and visited a Unitarian society. In 1831, a Unitarian church was organized near his home in Buffalo, and he became a charter member. Millard was affiliated with that church for 35 years and even took John Quincy Adams and President-elect Abraham Lincoln there to visit. So now I will give Mike a chance to tell you about some of the bad things regarding Millard Fillmore, and I will give you the remaining 5 items after that. Mike?
All right, thank you very much, Sister Ann. Well, when I was approached to do a February President's Day sermon, you know, I thought of a man I knew who did Revolutionary War reenactments of a Black veteran who had fought with Washington's army in the Philadelphia area here in 1777. I thought this would hit both President's Day and Black History Month. Unfortunately, we couldn't do live sermons because of COVID. So that was over. But then I was approached with what I thought was a very strange request. I was asked to do a sermon on Millard Fillmore. Now, I confess, I thought this was a joke. But as he was a Unitarian, I was told it was of interest. But Millard Fillmore? Our 13th president? I did know that LaSalle College had an ironic Millard Fillmore Society as a joke. I begged off, but Sister Ann volunteered, and I said I would help her well because she's Ann. I joked we should call the sermon Millard Fillmore, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I would do the ugly part, I thought. Now, the reason we even have a President Fillmore was because how presidents were chosen at that time. The Whig Party in 1848 wanted to nominate Mexican war hero General Zachary Taylor for president. The Democratic Party had just started and presided over a very successful Mexican war in which we took California, Nevada, New Mexico, Colorado, and Texas. The idea was to use a successful war against the Democrats by nominating a famous war hero from the war. The issue, though, was Taylor was a Virginia-born slaveholder from Louisiana. He needed to be balanced with a Northerner. So they picked Fillmore, a New Yorker, for the non-job of being vice president. The vice presidency is a nothing job now, but back then it was even more so as most vice presidents didn't even stay in Washington. They went home. Now, as the slavery issue was tearing the country apart in 1850, the big issue was what to do with the land we got from the Mexican War. The 1849 gold rush, you know, the San Francisco 49ers, made California fill up with Americans. And by 1850, they wanted to come in as a free state without slavery. The South did not want this because it would threaten the balance of free and slave states. It would give an extra free state in the Senate, which would be two extra senators. Now, President Zachary Taylor didn't like the fact that the South was threatening the country over this. He thought if California wanted to come in as a free state, they should be allowed to. He was a military man and a nationalist and a patriot. Even though he was a slaveholder, he thought, no, this the country first. Things were getting very tense. People were talking about a civil war. Unfortunately, though, for Taylor, during a military parade in 1850 on a hot day, he was eating iced cherries and drinking cold milk while watching the parade. He got sick and died a few days later. Now, the theory was that this was so absurd that maybe he had been poisoned by slave owners in the South. So about 25 years ago, Taylor's descendants agreed, you know, his great, 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 great grandchildren agreed to have his corpse exhumed and his body tested for poison. They did it and no poison. The cherries really killed him. Fillmore, what at that time considered the good-looking non-entity, became president and immediately caved into every Southern demand. In 1852, Fillmore was so unpopular, as seen as such a sellout and to the South, that the Whig Party was basically torn apart by this into Southern and Northern wings. They did not renominate him. They went back to nominating another Mexican war hero, Winfield Scott, but that went nowhere. And he went back to Buffalo, New York. Now, Fillmore was worried about the country and thought maybe the country could be distracted from the slavery issue. So he thought, there's another issue that can unite the country. How about if we stop talking about slavery and all get together and hate immigrants? In particular, the Catholics and the Irish. You know, so much for Unitarian tolerance. Fillmore made the point in an open letter in 1855 that immigrants were stealing elections. I guess, you know, I don't have to fill in the blanks on that one. Fillmore was nominated by the Know-Nothing, or officially called the American Party, in 1856 for president. The platform said an immigrant could not become a citizen or vote for 21 years until after they had come here. They also specifically wanted to limit immigration from Catholic countries because Catholics, they said, Roman Catholics would supposedly have a dual loyalty to the Pope rather than their country. That idea had continued because by 1928, when the Democrats nominated Al Smith for president, he had been governor of New York and a Catholic. They showed him pictures of him opening the Holland Tunnel, and the paper said that was a tunnel to the Vatican to get secret instructions from the Pope. The Fillmore candidacy did split one future presidential family, the Lincolns. Here is what a truly morally centered politician wrote about Fillmore and the Know-Nothing Party at the time. This is Abraham Lincoln. "I am not a Know-Nothing," quote. "This is certain. How could I be? How could anyone who abhors the oppression of Negroes be in favor of degrading classes of white people? Our progress in degeneracy appears to me to be pretty rapid. As a nation, we begin by declaring that all men are created equal. We now practically read it that all men are created equal except Negroes. When the know-nothings get control, it will read all men are created equal except Negroes and foreigners and Catholics. When it comes to this, I should prefer immigrating to some country where they make no pretense of loving liberty. To Russia, for instance, where despotism can be taken pure and without the base alloy of hypocrisy, end quote. Now, what I said split the family because here's what Mary Lincoln, his wife, wrote to a friend at the time in Kentucky. Quote, my weak woman's heart can only support Fillmore. He made such a good president and he feels the need to keep foreigners in bounds. If you in the South had to deal with these wild Irish servants that I have, the whole country would have had President Fillmore by proclamation, end quote. Now, Fillmore went on to win one state, Maryland. However, he split the vote in the North for the new anti-slavery Republican party, giving the election to the fanatically pro-slavery James Buchanan, Pennsylvania's first president, and who is often on the bottoms of the list by presidential historians of presidents. When the Civil War started a few years later, Fillmore's main concern to the Lincoln administration was that he must do everything to protect slavery to make the South happy and want to come back. He was so angry at the Emancipation Proclamation that he campaigned against Lincoln in 1864. When Lincoln was assassinated, Fillmore's neighbors were so angry at his criticism and lack of mourning on his house that they smeared black ink on his door. He quickly hung up black curtains after that had happened. Now, for the rest of Fillmore's life, his main political activity was pushing for the North to let the South not give any rights to freed slaves because he thought it would make the South mad. Now, it's clear I'm not a fan of Millard Fillmore, but if I'm going to try and draw a bigger lesson out of this, I think it speaks to the larger point that Fillmore was a Unitarian. That in itself does not make him a good person. If one thing that has ripped humanity apart since we emerged as a species, it has been we are tribal. Maybe it's in our DNA. To have a good civilization and for all this to work, we have to transcend this. And sometimes that means we need to call out ourselves as well as our own and not just the other guy. Fillmore fits this, I think. A Unitarian, maybe not so great. Thank you. Back to Sister Ann.
Thanks, Mike. We need a balanced picture of Millard Fillmore. So now we'll switch back to our top 10 list of good things about Millard Fillmore. And we're up to number 5, which is Millard Fillmore was friendly with his minister. I told you previously that Mr. Fillmore was a member of a Unitarian church in Buffalo. The minister of the church from 1836 to 1867. Did you hear those dates? He was the minister there for 31 years. We should be so lucky. George W. Hosmer disagreed publicly with Millard's positions, but they still enjoyed a close relationship. Upon Millard's death in 1874, the minister said about him, he dreaded war. By any and by every means, he would save his country from such calamity as war would bring. When Congress, by a large majority, passed the Fugitive Slave Law, then for the sake of peace, he thought best to sign it. Now all can see, and some saw it then, it was only postponing the horror. This is my interjection. Although some historians do claim that the delay allowed the North to strengthen its position. Back to the quote. But I know Mr. Fillmore was honest, unspotted by corruption, and never thought of the nation's capital as a place to make money or satisfy selfish ambition. No goods of the nation clung to him. His hands were clean. Integrity and economy kept him safe. So he had a number of qualities that we would welcome in today's leaders. Okay. Number four, Millard Fillmore did things in Congress. One thing was he enabled Samuel Morse to get appropriation that made the first practical telegraph line possible. Number three, Millard Fillmore did things as president. As president, in addition to the bad things that Mike told you about, Millard assigned Commander Matthew C. Perry to Japan to open up East-West trade. He encouraged railroad construction, issued the first U.S. postal stamp, and with his wife Abigail, the older woman, established the first White House library. Number two, this one is for Roz. Millard Fillmore had some noteworthy acquaintances. He was befriended by Dorothea Dix, the crusader for better treatment of the mentally ill. And last but not least, number one. When Millard Fillmore died, he was regarded as the city of Buffalo's leading citizen. After his presidency, Millard was active in civic life in Buffalo. He was the founder and president of the Historical Society, founder of the University of Buffalo and its medical college. He worked to improve the Lake Harbor and the Erie Canal terminus. He helped to create the Board of Trade, which is the forerunner to the Chamber of Commerce. He supported free elementary education, leading to the establishment in Buffalo of the first public school system in the state. And there is more, but I think you get the picture. Some have compared his post-presidential attitude in a lesser way to former President Jimmy Carter. And since 1960, each year on his birthday, which is in January in Buffalo, remember it's cold, a University of Buffalo chancellor or administrator visits Millard's grave and gives a talk. From one of those, by Dr. Carlotta Baca, came the following. Each year we come to this place and honor him, and each year we ponder with realistic assessment and with affection and even with a certain sympathy, this man who unexpectedly faced such turbulent crises with resolve, character, and courage. So you decide if you think Millard was a good UU or not. Happy President's Day. And now we will have a musical interlude, after which is Matters of the Heart.
Thank you, Ann and Mike. We've come to the part of our service, which we call Matters of the Heart, an opportunity for each person to share a joy which is lifting them up or a sorrow that is weighing them down with the wider community here. We're going to have a brief musical meditation, during which time you can gather your thoughts and prepare to share if you would like. And then once we come back from the musical meditation, I will give you some instructions on the process, how we're going to go about doing Matters of the Heart, part of the service. So sit back and relax for a second here while we play Prayer Shawl. This is a original by Christine Perry and with accompaniment by Isaac Strader.
Today's closing words come from the Gray Hymnal. Recognize that? Because of those who came before, we are. In spite of their failings, we believe. Because of and in spite of the horizons of their vision, we too dream. And now we will have our closing song and extinguish the chalice.
Thank you. Love will guide us. Peace has tried us. Hope inside us will lead the way. On the road from greed to giving, love will guide us through the hard night. If you cannot sing like angels, if you cannot
extinguish our chalice. Sorry, I did it out of order. So we extinguish the chalice, but not the flame, which we will take out into the world with us and spread the light.